Welcome to The Wolf Whistle, the podcast that interviews and celebrates the former players of our great club, Wolverhampton Wanderers. Welcome to The Wolf Whistle.
Welcome to the 32nd edition of the Wolf Whistle podcast, the podcast that interviews and celebrates the former players of our great club. First of all, I want to thank all the listeners. We're now on over 20,000 downloads, so please keep liking, subscribing, and it does obviously send us up the charts. On the subject of charts, we've got a goal scorer today who was always one of the leading goal scorers in the goal scoring charts, Guy Whittingham. 23 appearances for the Wolves, 9 goals. These come over two spells in 1994 and 1998. So we're very lucky to be joined today by Super Guy the Soldier. Guy, how are you?
Yes, during these strange times, I'm well, thank you very much.
Brilliant, brilliant. Now, Guy, obviously you're one I was looking forward to interview because you did have a fantastic goal scoring record throughout your career and at Wolves, which we'll come on to. But I believe you was locally born in Evesham, wasn't you, Guy?
Yeah, I was. My granddad lived around that area, the Vale of Evesham, all his life. My mum was there, and I was born in Evesham, yeah, way back in 1964.
Well, oh God, not long ago then. And obviously, Guy, your story is very interesting. I want to come on to the army, the buyout from the army. But so, where did your junior football career start, and what took you to sort of going into the army?
Yeah, well, I was born in Evesham. I lived there for 4 years. Then my mum and dad moved to Churchdown, between Cheltenham and Gloucester, so not a million miles away from Evesham. He was a postman, had a job in Gloucester, so he moved closer there. And really, it was as a young age, just playing for the local village teams, really. That's what it was. And towards my sort of 16th, 17th birthday, started playing for one or two men's teams on Sunday leagues. I used to play all sport, you know, at school, good old days when you had football for one term, rugby for the next term, and then cricket and athletics pretty much from March onwards. So I was a general all-round sportsman, I would say. Played both at weekends, sometimes at the weekends, playing Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, all sports. And then that time gets to when you're at school, you're in the fifth year, or year 11 as it is now, and you, instead of, you know, university and college wasn't really a thing then, it was go out and get a job. And I went to interview for all the apprenticeship schemes and, you know, working in factories and offices, and it really, really wasn't what I wanted. I wanted an outdoor life. I was a sporty person. I wanted outdoor life. So, just took myself off a bit of advice from my dad, who'd been who'd done his time in the RAF in his younger years. Went along to the Army Recruit Centre, and went off to Sutton Coldfield to do my sort of bit of training and to see if I could get in, and was allowed in. And I suppose really that was a big changing point in terms of just concentrating on football. I went for in the army you have a sports afternoon, Wednesday afternoon. I went to play rugby because I really loved rugby. I loved the control aggression of rugby. I thought it was a good disciplined sport, and they had too many numbers. So they told me to go off over a couple of pitches and join the football crowd, and that's what I did, and didn't really look back.
So it was almost by default.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah, I just loved playing all sports. I wanted to play all the sports I could play, and I suppose, yeah, if it wasn't for that one moment, who knows whether the career I had eventually in professional football would have happened, or whether it might have been rugby. Who knows?
See, that's quite strange, really, because, Guy, you had an unbelievable career, a fantastic goal-scoring career. But at what point did you get spotted by Waterlooville and then subsequently Yeovil?
Yeah, well, my first 2 years in the army, it was all about soldier training and trade training. So the sports afternoons was about it. You didn't really get much time to play actual for the unit or the army or the corps. It was when I'd finished my trade training. I'd gone off to Germany for 2.5 years, and I came back when I was nearly 22, over to a unit near Petersfield in Hampshire, Seamy Borden, that were looking to win the Army Cup. So they brought in some players to try and do that.
Some ringers.
So we all got together and won the Army Cup, and I suppose that's when I started then playing a high level non-league football. Went off to Oxford City in the first year I came back, and then the second year I came back, beginning of the season, so it would have been the beginning of the 88-89 season. Started at Havelaar Moor to Liverpool, went down there for pre-season training, got in the side, and then Yeovil spotted me. Incidentally, that season, 88-89, I know people say about, how do you hone your skills? I played 100 games that season for 7 different teams.
Wow.
And I think that's where I think I really honed in and practiced my finishing, because they were at different levels.
Yeah.
So at one stage, some games you'd be playing just for your unit. And basically that was a time for me to be able to play and practice things that I wouldn't have done in a more serious game. And the levels went from that up to combined services, and then also playing for Havelaar Moor to Liverpool. So a lot of games, a lot of time for me to practice what I wanted to do, different types of finishing. Some people say I should have practiced my first touch a lot more, but there you go, it got me where it got me.
You didn't do too bad.
I think, at the end of that season, before the end of that season, sort of about December time, Alan Ball was the current manager of Portsmouth. And the coach of my unit team in Borden near Petersfield, his son was in the School of Excellence, it was called there now. They're obviously called academies now.
Yeah.
And just on a training night, Alan Ball used to go watch the kids play because his love for the game. And Chris Eder's name was the coach, said said to him in passing, listen, there's a couple of lads you need to come and watch up for, they're playing for the Army. Alan Ball subsequently got sacked 2 weeks later, so I thought that was my chance over.
Yeah.
But then John Gregory apparently came up and watched a couple of my games into the new year of 1989. Liked what he saw, asked me down for a couple of games at Portsmouth. And then by that time I was at Yeovil, and Brian Horton, who was the manager, had alerted one or two other teams. Dave Bassett at Sheffield United alerted as well. But Portsmouth were the ones that showed the first interest. And after a couple of reserve team games down there, decided that was a team I'd signed for.
So how old was you at that point, Guy?
I was 24.
You see...
At that point.
I mean...
Yeah, it was probably the last chance I'd ever get.
Well, I mean, the reality is this, that wouldn't happen now, Guy. Players don't leave non-league, and especially, the Army, at the age of 24 to play professional football. I mean, most players come through either the academy structure, or they're spotted when they're 17, 18 and bedded in. But players don't break into first team, into professional football at 24.
Yeah. I think you've had recent, I think last season, Bristol Rovers signed an Army player that was, I think he was 22.
Wow.
But that's probably about the limit now. I know Jamal Lowe at Portsmouth came out, he was 21. But he'd been an apprentice at a professional club already and then gone into non-league and come back.
Yeah.
But it was, I don't think, certainly at 24, I don't think that'll be happening now.
I think the argument is now, Guy, if a player gets to 24 and they haven't been spotted, people automatically think there's a reason that they haven't been spotted, and sadly, as in your case, there could be a lot of wasted talent where people don't make it, whereas you was a lucky one and you got spotted, but there could be others falling away, sadly. Now what's even more interesting is, wasn't there a £400 buyout from the Army guy?
Yeah, listen, the Army were great for me. Conversations with my commanding officer and higher up, especially within Army football, brigadiers were involved. Where it was great publicity for the Army. Chris Akabusi at the same time was doing well with athletics,
yeah.
So any sort of sporting publicity for the Army was fantastic for them. And they said to me that, if it doesn't work out, I can come back in, same rank, same job role, which was
wow.
I had nothing to lose.
Of course.
So from that point, that was a great opportunity they gave me to be able to do that, and it was £400, that I had to pay initially, and Portsmouth gave me back.
Brilliant! So you got your money back then?
Yeah, I got my money back, yeah, for sure.
So there wasn't,
and more, I think.
There wasn't anything exciting like tracksuit tops and balls being sent the army's way, was there, for your services? It was just 400 quid.
It was just 400 quid, yeah. That was my value from the army for the time I'd put in and the training I'd taken from them.
I mean, what's quite amazing with this guy, like I said, you're 24 years of age, but I think as well, so... forgive me for saying this, when at the age of 13, 14, you was a young lad growing up, maybe younger, did you really have any dreams to be a footballer?
Of course, yeah,
of
course.
Oh, you did? All right, that's good.
Yeah, of course. That's you know, ultimately what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a sportsman.
Yes.
Whether that was athletics, whether it was football, whether it was rugby, you know, wasn't too much of a... I suppose football would have been the number one because of... obviously, you know, the exposure it gets. But I suppose where I was living, you had Gloucester Rugby and you had Cheltenham Town Football Club.
Yeah.
So the rugby was probably further up the importance list for the region rather than football. I suppose the closest teams would have been in the Midlands or Swindon or Bristol's. And I did have, when I was sort of 15, 16, we did reach the local village team I played for, Churchtown Panthers. We had a couple of County Cup finals, plays at Bristol City's ground, actually Ashton Gate.
Yeah.
And I'd written to a lot of scouts around the area and asked them down. And I unfortunately got injured in a cup final the Sunday before we were due the following week to play.
Yeah.
So I didn't actually play. I told him I was a number eight shirt, and the friend of mine who played the number eight shirt, I've always blamed him for me not being able to get my football career.
Oh, are you joking? He was watching the wrong player.
because back then, I suppose your younger listeners won't understand, but it was all, you wrote a letter.
Yes,
it took a
yes.
week to get there, you know. So that was my early days recollections of you know, wanting to be a footballer. I had a great sportsman at my secondary school who just encouraged me to play all the sport, and you know, thinking that would help me in whichever sport I chose to eventually go for.
Now, Guy, you had an incredible goal scoring record at Portsmouth. You might correct me, but the stats I've got, you scored 104 goals in 188 games, and because of the army connection, that got you the nickname Corporal Punishment. You made an interesting point earlier about your first touch, and obviously being a Wolves fan, Steve Ball, obviously, you know, he scored all them goals in the 87, yeah. 88, 88, 89 season. He, you know, 102 goals in two seasons there, and he also got criticised for his first touch, but what people used to say, what Wolves fans used to say was, yeah, his first touch wasn't great, but his second touch was in the back of the net.
Yeah.
Was that the same
for
you,
no,
guys?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was probably, my third one, because my first touch wasn't so good, my second was a tackle, and then my third one was in the back of the net.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I was not bad at sliding in on goalkeepers, something I think you get sent off for doing now.
Yes,
for sure, when my touch wasn't so good. Listen, I think, you know, doing what I do now, I expect we'll come on to that later, I think it's important that with players that have got a strength, you concentrate on the strength rather than weaknesses. Yes, I think you always try and improve, but if there's something that's outstanding about your play, then keep improving it.
Yes. Yes.
You know, that's my idea, and especially if it's something that will get you a career. And just touching on what I do now with you know, helping coaches towards their qualifications,
yeah,
is reminding them that, you know, you're coaching in the academy ultimately to help that player get a career in football.
Yes.
So if they're good at something, don't neglect that, because that's what might get them a career. And certainly with me, that's what got me my career, was my ability to score goals.
Yes. Yes. Now, Guy, in the 92-93 season, you scored 47 goals, which is just incredible, in all competitions. Bearing in mind, you know, you'd not long entered into the pro game. Was it almost like every time you took a shot, it was ending up in the back of the net?
I was really fortunate that year. Jim Smith had pulled a great team together at Portsmouth, and one of the you know, big signings was a player called Paul Walsh.
Yes.
That I think we were lucky to get in League One, as it was then, Championship,
yeah,
as it is now. I think you know, having him as a sparring partner up front with his ability on the ball allowed me to just concentrate on I didn't really have to get involved in too much build-up play. That would all go through Paul Walsh.
Yeah.
And I was just making sure I was ready for that ball when it came in the box. We had Mark Chamberlain with us, of course.
Yes.
Was able to provide lots of opportunities. Anna McLaughlin from midfield.
Yeah.
I think it's important, as a goal scorer, that you respect what others do for you.
Of course.
Yes, ultimately you get the accolade, but you know, Paul Walsh with his ability to hold up the ball, bring players into play. You know, wingers being able to put balls into the box, crosses, whether they're deep, long, short, whipped across, whatever they might be, and midfield players that make runs into the box that distract defenders, that allows you that little bit of space you need to be able to, you know, get a goal scoring opportunity. And then also, one of the things I think I concentrated on was, for forwards, you can gamble. You can gamble on anything in the box because it's not going to cost you. Defenders can't afford to gamble.
Yes.
If they make a mistake, it's going to cost them. It could cost them a chance for the opposition.
Yes.
So I always looked at, you know, the possibility of a defender making a mistake and being there when they did.
Yes.
I think out of those 47 goals, 45 of them were in the 6-yard box.
Wow. So. I mean, the thing is, you're quite right, Guy, because you know, as a striker, you can miss a chance and you know make a mistake, and it doesn't really matter. If you're a defender and you make a mistake, you could give a goal away, couldn't you?
Don't get me wrong. It does matter. It matters to that striker for sure.
Oh yes, yes, yes.
You know, that type of player. But at the end of the game, you're not. If you've lost, it's, you know, how do they score the goal? You know, what do we do? What are we doing defensively? How can we let them get that opportunity to score the goal?
Yes.
Whereas as a forward, if you're missing a chance, people aren't coming in and blaming you for missing your chance.
Yes,
if you miss 4 or 5 chances, people might start looking at you. You might get dropped.
Yeah.
But in close games, it's that one opportunity, that one half chance that wins you the games.
Of course, of course. And from there, from Portsmouth, that incredible. I know you obviously played three times for Portsmouth in your career, but you then moved on to Premier League Aston Villa at the time. I mean, how did that move come about, Guy? And did you think it was is that where you wanted to play, the Premier League?
Yeah, I think it's important to say, the beginning of that season, I'd felt from my army times that my fitness wasn't good enough to be able to achieve what I wanted to achieve. So I went out and got myself a guy called Arvel Lowe, who was training. A local athletics trainer was training one or two England athletes down in the ports there, David Black being one of them.
Yeah.
So I joined up with him and did a 2 weeks pre-season before pre-season started. And I think that also boosted my fitness and my, not just fitness as in being able to run for a long time, but my ability not to have injuries. And I went pretty much that season without having an injury.
Yes.
And I think it was, you know, 50 games altogether that season, which isn't a lot these days, I suppose, with all the other competitions they're playing.
Yeah.
But my point is that I'd really prepared myself. And from that point of view, I was preparing myself at the end of that season at 28. I'd be 29 in the November.
Yeah.
And if I didn't get the chance to play at the highest level, then I never would do.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just took it upon myself, and I wrote to all the Premier League managers, well, League One managers, Premier League managers as they are now.
Yeah.
At the time.
Well,
that was one thing I did. I did get a return off Sir Alex Ferguson, I have to say. I didn't get too many, but I did get one from him. But then Jim Smith was obviously a pal of Ron Atkinson.
Yes.
And also, you know, at the time, Trevor Francis and the Sheffield Wednesday and Aston Villa were the main two clubs that there was talks with. And I used the PFA to do my, at the time, agents were as prevalent as they are now.
Yeah.
So I used Des Bremner, ex-Villa player.
At, yes.
Whether he had any involvement in it or not, I don't know, but... That was where I ended up with Aston Villa.
So what's quite interesting there is, Guy, you're a professional player and you're still writing for an opportunity. And once again, I don't think that happens anymore. There's not players in the Championship writing to Premier League clubs for a number of reasons. And to get that opportunity at Villa, I mean, obviously you're back in Birmingham effectively, you know, from your Sutton Coldfield training days. Do you think you took the most of your chance at Villa, Guy?
Yeah, I'd like to think I did.
Yeah.
Obviously, I had 18 months there, and not a great deal of actually starting games. I was involved in most games in some way or another. when I was there, in terms of either being on the bench or playing. I think the first day in the changing room, I was getting changed, and Dalian Atkinson came up to me, God bless his soul, from about 2 inches away, eye to eye, and he just looked at me and went, "Are you here to take my place then?"
And I thought,
you know, you have to think instinctively, and I just said, "Well, I'm going to try." and I think that's what it was with that changing room. Then you had some players at the top of the game.
Yes.
You know, and I have to say, I think I learned every bit as much in my 18 months spell altogether at Villa as I did throughout my career anywhere else, because of the type of players I was with.
Yes.
Paul McGrath, what a player. Oh. A young Hugo Ekiog as well, you know, great guy.
Yes.
Sadly missed. Tony Daly was there at the time. Steve
yes.
Froggett was there at the time as young players. You know, and then Dean Saunders was there. Steve Staunton, Ray Houghton. You know, you had half the Republic of Ireland team there at the
wow.
time.
Wow, I mean, that was a good
Gordon,
side.
Gordon Cairns as well, you know, the Wolves. Gordon Cairns,
yes.
what a great player and a great guy. Oh.
Unbelievable.
So the learning I had there, when you said, did I make the most of my opportunities? Probably not as I would like to have on the pitch.
Yes.
But certainly in education about football at the highest level. Yes, yes, I did.
Of course. And then the biggest move of them all come. the mighty Wolves. I mean, look, the reality is this guy, in 92-93, you'd scored 47 goals, all competitions. 93-94, obviously... Villa had put you out on loan. Wolves were the lucky club to get your services. Now, in that period, you scored 8 goals in 13 games, which is incredible at any level. I mean, did the move work out for you? And would you have wanted that move to go permanent, Guy?
Yeah, I think it was it John Richards at the time was one of the directors.
Yes, that's. I think he was.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
I remember.
The managing director.
I think I'd done my first month's loan. And he put me in the office saying they want me to stay, but they want me to take a reduction in my wages. Now,
right.
Obviously, you're a Premier League football coming online. I'm thinking, hang on a minute, why am I taking a reduction in my wages? This is for you to work out with Villa, not me.
Yes, yes.
I'm the lone player, so they need to pay me the wages that they've agreed to pay me. How they work that out with Wolves is up to them.
Yes.
But anyway, I stayed an extra month, which was great. And I'm thank God for the web internet, because I'm looking at the record here of my games. So, and it was it was a great time. I'd still had aspirations of playing in the Premier League.
Yes,
I'd played in a few games for Villa, and I felt that I could play in the Premier League for a few years yet.
Yes,
and that's ultimately what I did when I went to Sheffield Wednesday. But Wolves never asked me to make the move permanently. So that never was a choice. If they had, I would have thought really seriously about it, especially because my wife Martha really loved the club.
Right.
It was a great club to go to, and also, you know, you look at the attendances at the time.
Yeah.
You know, you're going back to that, and I'm looking through the list now, and you know, you're in the 20,000s.
Yeah,
know,
Wolves, yeah, yeah.
Wolves, Wolves Tranmere Rovers 26,500. It's incredible. It was a great place to be, and my last
yeah.
game I think was Luton, and there was, you know, 25,500 then. So, you know, it's when you play in front of that's what you want to do. You want to play in front of big crowds, and you want to test yourself at the highest level.
Of course. And I believe it was Graham Taylor you was playing under, wasn't it, in your first spell?
Yeah, he came in, didn't he?
Yeah.
He came in. I think Graham Turner signed me.
Actually, that's interesting, because...
Yeah, I was there for one game under Graham Turner before he got the sack. And funnily enough, well, not funny for people that are involved, managers especially, the second spell was Mark McGee. And he had one game when he brought me in Ipswich away, and then he got the sack.
Flipping
so it must be something about taking me on. Yeah, exactly. No manager took me on loan again.
Yeah, first game on loan, get the boot. Yeah, so...
Well, no, actually, Graham Taylor did down at Watford. He took me on again. But yeah, you know, so it's funny how that worked, because it was the first time around Graham Turner, then Peter Shurtleff took a
caretaker manager
role, and then Graham Taylor came in, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all right, because when I was looking at the statistics, I couldn't quite work out which manager that had signed you, so I assumed it was Taylor, but obviously it was Graham Turner. Wow.
Yeah.
And at that time, in your first spell, you obviously, the three main strikers you played with was Lee Mills, Steve Ball and David Kelly. I mean,
yeah.
We'll start off with Steve Ball. Well, I mean, you guys, really, a couple of seasons before, you'd for your respective clubs had rattled in over 100 goals between you. So, I mean, yeah. that was really a partnership made in heaven, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm not sure whether there's a partnership made in heaven, because I think we were similar in a way.
Right, yeah.
Type of players.
Yes.
So it was a difficult one for me. Listen, he's a, quite rightly so, a club legend for what he did for Wolves.
Yes.
And I viewed myself coming, because he was struggling with an injury at the time, and I was just coming back from it. And I just thought I was going in there until he was fit, and then he'd come back, and I'd go back to Villa. You know, as it turned out, I had a longer spell. But Ned Kelly was a good player.
Yes, David Kelly.
You know, yeah, definitely a good player. And Lee Mills was a young player looking to make his way in professional football. And coincidentally bumped into him again further down the line at Portsmouth again. But there was also, you know, the midfield was a good midfield as well. You know, Tony Daly, Darren Ferguson, Kevin Keane. You know, there was some good players. Mark Rankin, Paul Birch, of course.
Yeah, Birchie, Paul Cook as well was there.
Paul Cook was there, yeah, he was there as well. Again, bumped into Cookie, you know, many times during the season. So there was some decent players there. It was a decent squad. And goalkeeper as well. Paul Jones, I still play in his annual golf day down here, down on the South Coast.
Oh, great.
You know, Mike Stowell, I'm still in touch with Stowley down at Leicester. He's done very well for himself.
Yes.
So, yeah, you know, good guys, good players.
And obviously, as well, there was another player at the club at the time, God bless him, Saul Regis.
Yeah. Of course, yeah. I mean, that was the one I was gonna say last of all, because I think it's a fitting tribute to end up with Cyril.
Yes,
absolute legend in the game, and especially in the Black Country.
I mean, what?
And I bumped into him several times in my role, you know, going around clubs, him being an agent for different players.
Yes, yes. And
a great guy, a real, you know, great human being.
Oh, great. And actually, it was quite bittersweet, because at Wolves, I believe, because you was on loan from Villa, you actually missed out on the League Cup final, didn't you, Guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually, it was the Charlton game. I'd been with Villa, I'd helped them get through to, I think it was the semi-final. I was on the bench for the semi-final, then went on loan to Wolves, and I'd been part of the team that, I'll have to get this in, that beat the Blues.
Yes.
Away at the Blues. Get
that in, mate, get that in.
And I was the weekend, I think it was the 27th of March was the cup final, and I was at on loan at Wolves, and we'd won 1-1 away at Charlton. I'd scored the goal, and then I joined up with the Villa team at the hotel afterwards, and enjoyed and went on as a spectator. Well, not as a spectator. I was a designated cameraman.
Oh, great!
Little video camera in the changing room for that game. Yeah, but it was great. You know, great involvement to get to Wembley, and I got a medal because of the games I've been involved in before.
Oh, perfect. And then the move then come to obviously stay in the Premier League at Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah. Trevor Francis, as I mentioned earlier, tried to sign me when Villa had signed me at Portsmouth, and Brian Little had come in to Villa and wanted to use me as a part of a swap deal for Taylor at who was at Sheffield Wednesday at the time.
I was part of the
swap deal that turned me to Sheffield Wednesday, and I have to say, you know, for pretty much 3 years then, I was pretty much a permanent fixture in a Premier League side, which was what I wanted.
Yes, of course. That's what you'd worked in your career for.
Yeah, I might have changed position slightly. When David Pleat came in, he put me as more of a midfield player. But even so, 3 great years playing Premier League football.
I mean, to be honest, that's a strange one for me, Di, because your goal scoring record was incredible. What was the thought process behind dropping you into midfield?
Well, I took some convincing. Trevor Francis, I'd played, I think I played 18 games and scored something like 8 goals in those 18 games. Wow. as a striker alongside David Hurst or Mark Bright. And when David Pleat came in, he saw me more as a midfield player on the right, and not a winger, because I couldn't jink past anybody. But I played simple, and I could cross the ball okay. But he saw me as another striker in the box, and have an additional goal scorer as well as two other strikers in that penalty area as well. That's what he wanted me to do. And I was, you know, I was 30 then. I was fit enough to be able to get up and down the pitch.
Yes.
With no problem whatsoever. It was one of my strengths. So he felt it took a month of playing Benito Carboni in front of me before I realised if I don't do something about this, then I'm not going to play Premier League games. So, So you know, he convinced me that, you know, he wanted to play me in that position, and the reasons why, felt that I was a good team player to be able to do the work required up and back the pitch, defending job as well as an attacking job, and felt that I was a player that he thought would be an additional bonus in the opposition's penalty area.
Yes, and then you just could not keep away from the club. There was a second spell on loan, four years later, 10 appearances, one goal. In fact, your goal, Guy, you'll remember the game very well, come away at Bristol City in a 6-1 rout. Davy Connolly got 4. I mean, that must have been a great game to play in.
It was a good game, and I've you know, still speak to Davy Connolly. You know, I think I was involved in setting it up of 3 of his 4 goals.
Brilliant.
I'd met him at Watford, and it was a young lad trying to make his way as well.
Yes.
It was a different team then, obviously. Different group of players.
Yes.
That were there, and a certain Robbie Keane that was young and making his way, and. You know, Steve Bull was still there, but Robbie Keane, I suppose, was the emerging talent at the time.
Yes.
And you could see why. You could definitely see why in training, week in, week out. You know, so I couldn't, although I was on loan there, again, Mark McGinn had taken there and got the sack after the one game I'd played in.
Oh, dear.
Really. Ipswich away. And it was a time where, you know, Colin Lee had then taken over, and he wasn't the person that brought me in. And obviously he was trying to put his stamp on his team and was using Wolves players, which, you know, but I again, being around the types of players that were there, and, you know, Keith Kerr was there as captain.
Yeah, Kerr.
Dean Richards, again, you know, great man.
Yeah.
Lee Naylor making his way.
Yes.
You know, I'm just going through, you know, the list of people that stand out. Darren Ferguson with Michael Gilkes. I mean, what a winger he was.
Gilkes.
And still, you know, and was part of the tutor force that helped him get through his pro licence.
Okay.
Carl Robinson, young Steve Sedgley, Paul Simpson, who's now involved with England with the 20s, I think he does now. You know, some good players then again there at the time that were Wolves players and not alone.
And there's a couple as well. Who've been
so I can understand.
And there's a couple who've been on the podcast.
Sorry,
as well.
Again.
I was just going to say, there's a couple guys.
Oh, yeah, great.
Yeah, Neil Emblin and Simon Osborne.
Brilliant. Stowley was still there. Matt Murray, of course. What a career he had.
Yes.
You know, so there were some good guys there at the time. And, yeah, I probably didn't get the amount of goals or the games I would have liked, but it was good to be around these guys and good to be back at the club that had treated me well.
Wow.
You know, 4 or 5 years previously.
And it's nice to hear that your wife obviously liked the club. I mean, can you remember where you stayed in Wolverhampton, Guy, or was you living in?
I lived in Shenstone.
Okay, yeah, which is obviously near Aldridge, Shenstone, yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't too far away, and I hadn't actually moved up to Sheffield when I was there, because we rented a place for 6 months when I first signed, thinking that we'd move up there, but the actual journey was just over an hour.
Right.
So in terms of having to move for the sake of, you know, still probably doing a 20-minute, half-an-hour journey, and I was doing an hour. So, you know, we felt that, you know, we had a good family home, we had good friends around us, so we'd stay where we were. And if need be, I'd rent a property up there that I'd shared with a couple of other Sheffield Wednesday players that on, you know, the right times, we'd stay there.
Yes.
But no, we were settled in where we were in Shenstone.
And going back to a player that you just mentioned from your time at Wolves, Robbie Keane. I mean, could you see him as a talent in, you know, playing with him obviously in games and training? Could you see that he was going to be a real big player?
Yeah, absolutely. And the biggest clue for that is, as a young player, how much trust other players gave in him to give him the ball.
Yes.
And then when you gave him the ball, if he was anywhere near the penalty area, you weren't getting it off him.
Yes.
He knew what he wanted to do straight away, and that was to get a chance and get a shot off.
Yeah.
Oh, so, you know, he had the determination and the ability to have the career he had.
And then you got the chance to go back to your beloved Portsmouth on loan, and then it was Watford, Portsmouth again. And, you know, have you got a real affinity with Portsmouth, Guy?
Yeah, of course. You know, they were... I think I've got a real affinity with pretty much like I have, I think, with the Wolves fans that you've described, especially from that first loan. I think if you're a player that puts in lots of effort and from my point of view scored a couple of goals, which helped, but if you show the fans that you're willing to put everything in to what you do for playing for that team, and that's certainly over the 4 years at Portsmouth I did here, great affinity with the crowd and the fans. And they were the team that brought me out of the army, gave me the opportunity, the fans that backed me. Yeah. So I suppose, you know, out of all the clubs I've played for, Portsmouth, where my affinity is, and I live down this way now as well.
Brilliant. I mean, you know, considering you started out at, say, 24 in the professional game, to make over 450 career appearances is quite an achievement, Guy, to be fair.
Yeah, I felt it was... I had time to make up for, as you said, 24 is quite late to enter the professional game.
Yeah.
So I kept going till I was 36, getting those appearances in. So over those 12 years, you know, amassing that amount of game, you know, was a real achievement. And I think, and I do believe that if I hadn't had my opportunities and my training in the army and learned what I learned about not just physical fitness, but attitude, doing the right things at the right time, being a team player, I wouldn't have got that career. If I'd been an 18-19 year old stepping into first team football, I'm not quite sure I'd have had the same career as I had.
Yes.
I think my learning along the way with the career I had up to 24 put me in good stead for what was ahead.
Oh, completely. And this is a question I always ask people, Guy, and I think I know the answer in your case because of the route you're taking. But did you see football as a job, or
No, absolutely. You know, those pre-professional football days, you know, when you have your garden parties or your house parties or whatever, all the guys I used to, you know, invite around and hang around with, we're all sportsmen and majority footballers, and you end up in the kitchen talking football.
Yes.
Because you love the game. You know,
yeah.
You really love the game. And I think that's the real difference now with some players, not saying all, but I think some players are just so overwhelmed from a young age with the amount of football they are involved with.
Yeah.
You know, young kids, you know, travelling the distances they travel, and the amount of time they put into training and games they have at just one club without being able to play other sports.
Yes.
So by the time they're 20, some of them are footballed out.
Now,
I know I played a lot of games, but it was for different clubs. It was mixing with different people. This is, you know, these players, young players, are having to concentrate a lot on one area. And you've really, to succeed now, I think you've really, really got to love the game. I'm not sure by the time they get to where they get to, because of the influences, either parents or agents stepping on them, telling them they've got to do this, got to do that,
yeah,
where they actually still love the game.
And I think that's a great point, because I think a lot of these young players who are coming through, and like you said, they're playing football now from the ages of 6 or 7, then they get spotted by an academy and they can quickly get footballed out. But, you know, they're all geared, and, you know, the family are pushing them, everyone's pushing them to be a professional footballer, when sometimes the pressure just might be too much for them.
Yeah, I mean, I've got three boys, and sometimes I look back at myself and think, did I push them enough? But I just wanted them to enjoy sport. I wanted them to be sporty, because I think that's where your health is really at the forefront of what you do. So
yes,
if you're a healthy person, you're going to get on life. If you get on with people, you're going to get on in life. If you can build relationships, communicate well, and you're healthy, and you look on the bright side of life, you'll do well. You know, you won't struggle for employment because people employ good people.
Yes.
Now, whether I push them enough into academies and train them enough in football, again, I just want them to be healthy.
Yeah,
they're all involved in football. My wife's an art teacher, so she's pretty disappointed that none of them have been creative enough to follow that route. My eldest is at Brighton. He coaches in the community, and he's involved with the pre-academy young players.
Oh, great.
My middle lad, Max, he's a sports, he's a S&C coach at Bournemouth with the first team. And my youngest, Alfie, is currently playing at Aldershot, working his way up the leagues. Or say currently, obviously everything's been stopped now. But he's worked his way up through the leagues. And I encourage them all to really enjoy playing with their mates.
Yes.
For the fun of the game, because I wanted them to love the game.
See, I'm surprised, Guy, you didn't stick them all in the army and do it that way.
I think my wife had a sort of bit of decision around that. Didn't want him to listen. Some say my timing in the box was quite good, but my timing to join the army was very good because I joined two years after the Falklands and left 2 years before the first Iraqi war. So wow. I think my timing in the army was good as well.
Yeah.
The only exercise I did was a 2 week rock climbing exercise in Gibraltar.
Oh.
So.
Hey, look, guys, it all counts. It all counts. And have you ever done any jobs where that have not been involved with football since football? Have you ever done any jobs that have not been involved with football in any way?
No, fortunately enough, I've always been involved in the game. When I finished playing as a professional, I was lucky enough to be taken on PFA into coach education, which is what I do now.
Yep.
At the same time, I was doing some part-time managing at local non-league clubs. Then after the PFA, I went back into Portsmouth as a coach from what now is the 23s. To a first team coach, to assistant manager, to having a spell as a manager, and now I work for the FA. So always been involved in football.
Brilliant. So what actually do you do now then, Guy? What's your role now?
Okay, so at the moment I am a lead tutor on the UEFA Pro license.
Yes.
So all the guys that are the requirements of the Premier League and the Championship, you have UEFA Pro license. So once they work through their coaching qualifications, get the A license, they have the opportunity to apply for the Pro license.
Yes.
We take on 24 a year, which is not a great amount.
Yep.
It's regulations stipulated by UEFA that we have to be guided by. So I'm working with some great guys now that are going through the highest possible coaching award you can get.
Wow. And I believe you did one of your UEFA badges with a former Wolves striker, Dean Edwards.
Yeah, I went to Lillishaw. We used to do them then. Yeah. Was going through that then at the time. Back towards the end of my playing days.
Yeah.
But I knew I wanted to stay involved in football. And obviously, you've got more chance staying in football with you if you've got the qualifications.
Yes, of course. And what I don't know if you remember, we was talking about the game earlier away at Bristol City when we beat them 6-1. Do you actually remember what happened at half time, Guy?
Yeah, it was the fight, wasn't it, between the
the mascots,
between the Wolves.
Yeah,
mascots. Yeah, and it was and the pigs, wasn't it? It was.
The three little pigs.
You couldn't have written a script for it, could you?
The three little pigs and the wolf, and then you guys go down there and smash them 6-1 off the park. I mean, that was a that was a bad day for Bristol City, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. It wasn't a good day for them, was it? Not good publicity from that day.
Brilliant. Well, Guy, I just want to thank you for your time today. I found that very interesting. I want to thank you as well on behalf of the Wolf Whistle Podcast and Wolves fans out there for the service you gave to the club. 8 goals in 13 appearances in your first spell, 1 goal in 10 appearances in your second spell. That's 9 in 23. That's a fantastic goal scoring record, Guy. And we really appreciate the time of Super Guy the Soldier on the podcast today.
No, thank you very much for inviting me on. And I got reminded of that a couple of years ago when I was doing my job at the FA at Tottenham. And they were playing Wolves Academy. And I was there on a Sunday watching one of the games. And I walked in afterwards and somebody just shouted, "Super Guy the Soldier, are you?" And I thought, oh my God, I just haven't heard that for a long, long time. So, it's certainly something that was stuck with me. It was a pleasure playing for the club. And thank you for inviting me on.
No problem. Actually, that song, Super Guy the Soldier, didn't most clubs sing it, Guy? Or was that originated at Wolves?
It originated at Wolves. And my abiding memory of that is my goal at Notts County, when I scored a goal, and then that away end was singing that. It was great. It's a great feeling for any player to have a song dedicated to them.
Wow. Well, Guy, it's been once again an absolute pleasure hearing your story today on the Wolf Whistle podcast, and we hope to have you on soon.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.